All right, I'm going to warn you. I just took a swig of this orange stuff. It's supposed to be good for what ails you. They call it Dayquil. And I will warn you, folks, when I take this kind of stuff, this is the stuff that isn't supposed to put you to sleep in the little triangular bottle. When I take this stuff, it always adversely affects me. I don't know, it makes me feel like I'm going to jump out of my skin. And now I've got an hour of open lines ahead and 2 hours of the program ahead. And you'll probably be able to tell if you keep listening when it's going to hit me. And it's on top of some other stuff that I took before, too. I'm fighting off this sinus thing that every time I think it's gone, it jumps up for one more round. But you know how that feels? Feels bad. I don't like it. And the worst yet, it's been during some of the most beautiful weather in St. Louis that I have seen. And you can't really enjoy the beautiful weather when you step outside, take a deep breath, and you can't take a deep breath. Or you go outside and you take a deep breath, and when you go back inside, you get a sinus headache. That's life under the cross. That's why God invented Dayquil. We'll just hope it works. We spent some time in the last hour talking about, well, a general trend with two different guests, two different subjects. The Episcopal Church USA and the Presbyterian Church USA, both of them kind of in the heart of the main line of Christian Protestantism in the United States, and both of them bleeding members at a horrendous rate. We're talking about a hemorrhage here that if they were a patient, they would have died on the table a long time ago. The Presbyterian Church USA, on average, losing 35,000 members a year. My church body just got all in an uproar because we apparently, if you, depending on how you want to run the numbers, lost 50,000 in the last, 20 years or something like that. And we're all in a panic. The Presbyterian Church USA, same size church body as mine, loses that many in a year on average. Unbelievable. Why? I can tell you why. They're abandoning the truth. Now, will they be here 30 years from now? You bet they will. They will be here smaller, but they will be here 30 years from now. And they will probably be more liberal. They probably have homosexual ordination as part of their rule. Who knows? Maybe you will have to be a homosexual to be ordained in the Presbyterian Church USA in 30 years. They'll still be here, though. And what happens in these church bodies is all you got to do is understand it in terms of physics. Let's say you've got a pot full of water sitting on the stove, and you have poured in enough sugar into this water, and it dissolves. It can't hold any more sugar. All right? It's at its saturation point. And you start to boil the water. And the boiling action is, let's say that is the influx, the influence, and the progression of theological compromise. The longer you boil that pot, the less water there will be in the pot, and the more, at least apparently as you can see it, sugar left in the pot. If you boil it long enough, you'll have nothing but sugar. The water will all be gone. That's how liberal theology and the compromise of the truth concentrates itself in mainline Protestantism, by attrition. Those who love the truth eventually leave. I was talking just a few minutes ago with Parker Williamson. Parker? I've asked him, I didn't ask him this time, but I've asked him this a dozen times. Parker, why don't you leave? Why do you stay and fight? Now, today he gave an answer that just makes perfect sense to me. He says, this is the garden that God put me in to tend. And he'll do it no matter how hard it's going to be. Do you ever want to give up? He didn't really answer my question. He said, if I gave up, that would mean giving up on the things that he has been fighting for. He can't do it. What issue would it take for you to leave your local church or the denomination to which your church belongs? Even if you're non-denominational, think of it in terms of your local congregation. What issue would it take for you to leave? The issue in the Episcopal Church USA, among many others, of course, is homosexuality, be it same-sex unions or the ordination of homosexuals. Worldwide Anglicanism spoke very recently. You know what they said? When 38 bishops from all over the Anglican world got together, they said, we do not approve of homosexual behavior. They even had the backing of Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who has ordained active homosexuals into the clergy. but while serving as Archbishop of Canterbury, has said he will follow the church's lead. And yet the Presbyterian Church, the Episcopal Church USA, it's happening all over the place. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Homosexual activist groups within that church have said, look, it's not a matter of when we ordain homosexuals. We are doing it. The church has just got to catch up with us. And they're doing it. The Presbyterian Church USA, Parker, are they ordaining homosexuals in the Presbyterian Church USA now? Yes, they are. So what good is a ban against it if it's not enforced? His answer was, well, it's not only the ban that's no good. The Constitution of the Church is useless if it's not enforced or enforced. What would it take for you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What? A line that many of these churches have already crossed long ago, the ordination of women to the pastoral office? Would that do it for you? What about the ordination of gay clergy, the one that everyone's struggling with right now? What about a worship life that ceases to follow in the footsteps of the historic church and follows the culture? We tend to think about the Episcopalians as being people of the Book of Common Prayer, and they never vary their liturgy. You know what? When we were talking with Joyce Milton in the first half hour, one of the things she pointed out in her article on National Review Online, which we didn't talk about, those who are calling for an abandonment of the truths of the Christian faith and calling for the church to turn its attention towards social action were the same ones, believe this, it's... I have a hard time believing it, who in their own churches, St. John the Divine in New York, every worship service had to top the last one. Circus elephants, I do not joke with you, have figured prominently into worship, as well as inviting the Dalai Lama to preach, He, by the way, is a leader of Buddhism. At least Tibetan Buddhism. Circus elephants. What issue would be the issue that would cross the line for you in your local congregation or in your church body? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, this is something we need to start thinking about now. You know, let's just do exactly what everyone in the church is telling us to do. We got to plan for the future. Let's plan for the future. Let's not assume that the future of the church is going to be continued pristine theology and a love of the truth. Let's assume that it will be what the apostles and our Lord has promised and warned us it will be, and that is people who no longer love the truth. So let's start thinking about what these issues will be before they're upon us, and we're trying to think about them like the proverbial frog in the tea kettle. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. First up, Kurt is calling from his car. Kurt, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor.
Hi.
I just turned on the radio. I was listening to you, and you posed a question, what would get you to leave church? I'm a staunch Lutheran. I've been Lutheran my whole life and will die a Lutheran. First and foremost, if any place was preaching homosexuality, I would go stomping out of there. I oppose it extremely. How do you nail it? What do you say? What would it take? Well, that one's easy. Anything whatsoever that preaches, teaches anything other than Jesus Christ being the number one. You know, how everything is, you know, a lot of times we think about us and me, and then after listening to AMA 50, I've learned that everything is all about Jesus. And we always have to look to Him for everything, for answers to problems and just how to live our life. So anything whatsoever out of that box would probably make me leave.
So what percentage of I'm asking you to give me something of an opinion here. What percentage of Lutheran churches do you think actually preach Christ and Him crucified, that stay in that box on a Sunday by Sunday basis, where that is the content of their preaching, of their worship, where that is the center of everything they do?
Well,
since you say you're a Lutheran.
I'm sorry?
Since you say you're a Lutheran, I'll ask you that about the Lutheran churches.
Well, I had thought years ago that they all did, but then why I understand there's this ELCU or ELCA, which has been liberalized. I've never been to one of those, and there's no telling what they're preaching in there, and I might be wrong, but I don't think they're doing it. I could be wrong, but I don't think they're preaching the same thing as Missouri Synod. The few that I have gone to have taught that the Jesus Christ being the center.
Kurt, one more question, then I'm going to let you go. This is something I've been wondering about a lot. Is which one really do you think would get people up? What kind of issue do you think would really get people saying something's going wrong here? Because I've talked to people in the mainline Christian denominations at length on this program, and it seems to me their red flags don't raise until they're way, way, way down the road. I'll ask them about the ordination of women. Were you alarmed when your church body ordained women? Well, you know, that didn't bother us so much. But now this homosexual ordination thing has really got us going. And It seems as though people's reaction time or their sensitivity to these things is rather slow. Which kind of issue would cause you to react more strongly? Would it be a moral issue like homosexuality or a doctrinal issue like whether or not a male or a female occupies the pastoral office?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. Moral issue, I definitely would go walking out. There was the doctrinal where I have heard even Lutherans say, well, now, you know, what's wrong with the woman going up there at the pulpit? And that would definitely make me walk.
Kurt, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, this is something I'm wondering about, because it seems as though there was largely the Presbyterian Church USA didn't get to where it is today in a week, or a month, or a year, or a decade. It has been a long series of compromises on many issues. How does the Episcopal Church USA get to the point where... Well, no, let's use Presbyterian Church USA again, because Parker talked about this in the last half hour. He said that there are seminary professors at one of the seminaries of that church body who deny the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. That they didn't start doing this yesterday. You don't get there until you have made a long series of compromises, both in doctrine and in morals. And I wonder what resonates with the average person sitting in the pew, who doesn't necessarily have their antenna out for every last little thing that's being said in the sermon, but suddenly wakes up one day, goes to church, and hears their pastor say, today our guest preacher will be Mrs. So-and-so. And they say, she's wearing a collar. Do we have female pastors in our church? And, you know, someone next to the person says, oh, yeah, where have you been? We've had female pastors for 25 years. Oh, did you know, by the way, she's also a lesbian? Wait a minute, do we have lesbian pastors too? Where have you been? We've been talking about that for 2 years. Now, we haven't made up our minds yet, but you can still find them. Now this person is up in arms. Now this person says, my church is going wrong. Something's wrong in my church. But up to that point, they have been like that frog in the tea kettle that has not noticed that the heat has been rising until the bubbles start to form around them. And then they say, it's getting hot in here. What would it take for you? I mean, is there a tripwire issue that would say, oh, now that's where my red flags go up? I can put up with a lot of things, but I can't put up with that. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Where would you draw the line in the sand and say, this is where I'm done with my church body? As loyal as I have been and as long as I have been a member, if they preach this, if they do this, I draw the line in the sand and I go. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or maybe you don't have a line. Maybe you say, It doesn't really matter anyway. You know, I think that's what a lot of the people in the Presbyterian Church USA and the Episcopal Church USA used to say 10, 15 years ago. Come on, that's just the people at the, you know, if you're a Presbyterian, that's just the seminary professors. They don't, you know, they don't affect where I am today in my church. We're never going to have a gay pastor here at this congregation. I think that's where they were about 10, 15 years ago. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Tell me if I'm wrong. This is my sense. My sense is that it is the moral issues that get people's attention. The doctrinal issues, and I'm talking about the person sitting in the pew, the person who would be otherwise kind of in the mushy middle. When it becomes a moral issue in the church that seems where the church seems to be deviating, then they say, wait a minute, what's going on here? And that the doctrinal issues, the issues of what's being preached or taught regularly, what changes are being made in the practice of the church, those, until the moral issues raise the red flag, seem rather irrelevant. Am I wrong on this? I mean, is there that kind of doctrinal apathy in the church? How else would you account for church bodies that have at least survived the last 30 years in an endless series of compromises? And only now are there people jumping ship, as in the case of the Presbyterian Church USA, at 35,000 on average a year. How else would you explain it? Other than a long series of compromises accompanied by general apathy until things just got unbearable. Would you put up with this kind of stuff at your kid's school? I mean, there are people out there who have devoted their lives and their fortunes to seeing to it that there are not homosexual scout leaders in the Boy Scouts. Who might not even blink if they had a homosexual man standing in the pulpit. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Here's a story, and if you think this is the kind of inside stuff that only, well, you know, this is only the Presbyterians. What can you expect from Presbyterians? These are the Episcopalians. What can you expect from Episcopalians? Everybody knows that they've been the church of liberalism for a long time. I'm looking on the American Family Association website, which usually talks of nothing but who's going to be the next Supreme Court nominee and George Bush's tax plan and yada, yada, yada. And I find an article, and it catches my eye because the word Lutheran is there. I don't think I've ever seen the word Lutheran on the AFA website. As far as the AFA is concerned, Lutherans don't exist, except, here it is, a moral issue that has caught their attention. Lutherans contend with issues of homosexuality, same-sex unions. I mean, even the American Family Association is sitting up and paying attention to Lutherans. What's a Lutheran again? Are they the ones that wear the tall hats and riding carrot? No? Oh, those are the Mennonites. Well, the Lutherans are kind of like them, I guess. Now they're paying attention. Why? The same church body that has been making doctrinal compromise after doctrinal compromise for 25 years now decides it's going to compromise on a moral issue like homosexuality, and the AFA pays attention. I'll share that story with you in just a minute. Let's go back to the phones. I don't want to leave Ron, who's calling from his car, waiting any longer than necessary. Ron, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks. I'm listening here. I'm on en route to a job, and I'm hearing you talk about what would cause us to leave a church body. We go to a Southern Baptist body of believers here, and about a year, and about 2-3 years ago, they started following the Willow Creek model or methods of doing church. I call it doing church. And little by little, I see a slip in the doctrinal preaching. We're going more to the how-tos, and my spirit starts churning, saying something's not right here, something's not right. One thing leads to another, and then now we've got a lady that is opening the service, and now she's closing the service. I wrote a long letter to the pastor about trying to address about five different issues. We've had some conversations back and forth. The bottom line is we are leaving. We didn't even get to the point where we ordained a woman, but I could see the handwriting on the wall. It's just like the camel gets his nose under the flap, tent flap, and then one thing leads to another. So we're leaving just because of that.
Ron, thank you very much. You've pointed out something that is quite important, and that is doctrine and practice are related to one another. Did you know that? In fact, I've written an article about this in the last issue of the Issues Etc. Journal called Doctrine and Practice. They're actually related to one another. What you believe actually affects what you do, and what you do actually affects what you believe, especially in the church. Now, there is a whole campaign in the church designed entirely to tell people what we believe can be separated from what we do. What we do is really irrelevant to what we believe. Why did Ron leave his Baptist church? In fact, he's being a good Southern Baptist because Southern Baptists have very recently overturned their decision to ordain women to the pastoral office. They had been doing it kind of here and there, never a head pastor, always an associate pastor. And then they finally said, nope, we're going to put an end to this. And they did. I think that's historically unprecedented, but they did. Good for them. Ron is being a good Southern Baptist. He's saying, look, this is, looks like it's going the wrong direction. I see the beginning of compromise. But there are those who would say, look, what we do on Sunday morning really has no bearing upon what we believe. We still believe the truth. What we practice is more of kind of a, we're really in the area of one by one gigantic loophole when it comes to practice. Everything is a loophole. Now, here's the problem. If everything is a loophole in practice, then by definition, the rules are off in every respect, right? For instance, someone says, here's an example I use in my article. Here's an example. Someone says, look, an issue that's really neither here nor there is what the pastor wears on Sunday morning. He doesn't have to wear robes or a suit or anything. And I would say, right, insofar as that goes, that issue is really neither here nor there. But that doesn't mean that there's no wrong way of doing it. In other words, just because it is really doctrinally neither here nor there what a pastor wears on Sunday morning, doesn't mean he can come and preach the sermon naked or in a prom dress or in a Speedo, right? Just because there are more than one way to do it right doesn't mean that there's no way to do it wrong. Is that simple enough for you? Practice matters. And what Ron has detected is that in the practice of his church, doctrine is at stake. By the way, here's a little secret. It always is. What about you? What would it take for you to say enough? I mean, people are leaving churches all the time. I am a member of a large church here in St. Louis. We added about, I don't know, I would guesstimate 60 some odd members. 3/4 of them came from other churches. People are leaving churches all the time. What would it take for you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration.
Wouldn't it be great if we went through life without any problems? Well, that's just not the way things are. Life can get tough, but we can face whatever comes along with peace and confidence because there is reason for hope. We're your neighbors, the people of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we'd like you to know that with Christ, there's plenty of hope to go around.
A message from your friends at Issues Etc.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. bipartisan squabbling over medical marijuana and the reauthorization of the National Drug Control Policy Office. Congress approves how much money will be spent in federal drug enforcement, as well as where those dollars should go. David Brody reports from Washington.
Democrats in the Government Reform Subcommittee are complaining that language inserted into the reauthorization bill would give drug czar John Walters a loophole to use funds so media campaigns could be directed at certain states, urging them not to legalize marijuana for medical purposes. Alan St. Pierre is with the group Normal. They want to legalize marijuana.
This also, too, can be used in a very partisan way, that these ads can be used in a way that just raises the specter of whether there is some partisanship.
For a while now, there's been talk on Capitol Hill that something must be done about the problem of medical marijuana. Fox News analyst Colonel Bob McGinnis has been following this issue for years.
What is happening out in the culture is you have these deep-pocketed people that are funding these misleading advertisements saying that, you know, sick people need marijuana, where in reality they don't need marijuana. They need pure medicine that our Food and Drug Administration is prepared to deliver.
And therefore, McGinnis says Congress should step in.
And to counter those bad messages that are out there in our local high schools and in the airways, we need to have some mechanism to do that.
A spokesman for White House Drug Policy Director John Walters says the office has never used ads for partisan purposes. Congress plans to continue the debate next week. For Family News and Focus, I'm David Brody in Washington.
Republicans say the amendment to the reauthorization bill was simply a way of making sure Congress would have tighter controls on spending. Voters in seven states have passed referenda that allow the use of marijuana as a form of medical treatment. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
An Outer Limits Adventure Camp will be presented by the St. Louis County Parks Department during June and July. Cost of the week-long camp is $150 per child. The camp will be based at West Tyson County Park, I-44 and Lewis Road. Campers will experience the Alpine Tower, canoeing, caving, team challenge course, map and compass, games, and an overnight at the park. Advance registration is required, and for more information or to register, call the St. Louis County Parks Department.
What were the beliefs, teachings, and practices of the first evangelicals? Find out with the book, The Spirituality of the Cross, by Dr. Jean Edward Veith. The Spirituality of the Cross is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Spirituality of the Cross is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, 1-800-325-3040. You can find out more about this book on the internet, issuesetc.org, and click What's New. The Spirituality of the Cross, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May.
Welcome back. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. For the next 25 minutes, anything you'd like to talk about, the phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Riddle me this. Why can I talk about gun control during Open Lines on one day and get people who are so animated, they're ready to like leap through the microphone and grab me by the throat because we're talking about gun control, Christians. And you talk about the ordination of homosexuals to the clergy and they're like, oh my goodness, I'm getting sleepy. Maybe turn over and listen to Hannity for a while. How can this be? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Chuck is calling from his car. Chuck, thank you for waiting and welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. You posed a question earlier about doctrinal apathy.
Yeah.
It almost seems like it's an issue of doctrinal ignorance that's just built up over the years. It seems that our churches don't really take the time to teach why do we believe what we believe. They just things because that's the way they've always done them, and there's not any real explanation. You know, as people come into the church or you're raised in the church, as to why do Baptists or Lutherans or Presbyterians believe the way they do.
Why don't
And so when issues come along, people don't. They have no basis to draw on about why am I a Lutheran or a Baptist or whatever.
Chuck, why do you think there has been an absence of teaching the lay people why they believe and what they believe?
There seems to be so much effort expended towards just reaching the lost and trying to get them to that point of salvation, and the follow-up always seems to be kind of lacking so often, where, you know, the main emphasis is just let's get them in the door, let's say that they're saved, and And that follow-up of really growing a believer and discipling a believer is usually really kind of dismally lacking in most churches, I think.
Chuck, thank you very much for the call. Insightful thoughts. Mike Horton says, in an effort to, in the modern efforts of the church to reach the lost, they're losing the reached. That's how he sums it up. Not reaching the lost, but losing the reached. I've, at times, in my more cynical moments, wondered whether or not it was actually intentional. I mean, with the dumbed-down laity, with people sitting in the pew who don't know what it is their church believes, you can pretty much do what you want. I mean, you get your people sharp on the truth and sharp on the Word of God, they're going to question a lot of things. They're going to say, now, wait a minute, a lot more often. They're going to call you to account for what you say from the pulpit a lot more. Keep them dumb, at least with regard to the truth of God's Word and what it is Christians ought to believe, and you can pretty much write yourself a blank check, right? There's an essay that was written by C.F.W. Walther some time back. He was the first president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It's called The Sheep Judge Their Shepherd. If you can ever look it up on the internet sometime, just type in The Sheep Judge Their Shepherd. It's out there in, via a search engine someplace. Read it. It's not long. Read it. It will make you, if you're sitting in the pew every Sunday morning, it will make you realize your duty with regard to your pastor, why he needs you to know the Word of God. It makes him a better preacher, by the way. Kurt is calling from his car. Kurt, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Pastor Todd, following up on the previous caller, why we don't hear a lot of doctrine, I think even within Orthodox churches, there is a dumbing down. And I think we may lay some of the blame at the feet of the church growth people, but I think in a broader way, it's our whole culture, which is so marketing oriented, and we don't want to offend. And every day we go to work, and we are selling and trying to be good employees and trying to please people and not offend. And I think this carries over when, unfortunately, maybe I'm naive, but I really do feel that people, when they go to church, they want the business to stop. They want to hear it straight. They want authenticity. People say that Gen Xers want authenticity, but unfortunately, even a lot of the church growth people that want to reach Gen Xers, they're advocating meeting. It's so difficult. You know, on one hand, we want to reach people, and we want to speak their language. On the other hand, you know, we really do need our pastors to preach it straight. And maybe we all ought to just say, preach it, Pastor. We all ought to respond from the, I know probably Lutherans and Presbyterians don't do that very often, but maybe we ought to do that, because when our pastors do get bold, when they start really speaking on those issues that are tough, we should really encourage them.
Kurt, thank you very much. You know, I don't think it's anything un-Lutheran or un-Presbyterian to say, preach, Pastor. We expect you to preach the Word. In fact, you can even open the Bible and hold your pastor to an actual passage where Paul gives that precise command. He says to Peter, he says, preach the Word. Be earnest in season and out of season. He doesn't just say preach. He says, preach the Word. This is a very no-nonsense approach to what the pastor ought to be doing and what the church ought to be about on Sunday morning, isn't it? He says nothing in there about, well, I'm all for speaking people's language. I'm all for reaching people where they're at. But once you've reached the person where he's at, and once you're ready to speak his language, what are you going to say? That's why Paul says, preach the Word. Ty is calling from his car. Ty, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello, Pastor Todd. I only have a second, so I'll make this really brief. I consider myself something of an amateur church historian. And at least in my experience, in my reading, what's going on in the church today seems to be absolutely without precedent. Certainly there seems to be times throughout church history where things got perhaps a bit too conservative or a bit too legalistic, but just the unwinding of the whole fibers and the fabric of orthodoxy, and while there certainly seems to have been throughout church history some homosexual scandals within the church or that sort of thing, as far as I know, it's without precedent that this sort of thing has made a real push to get acceptance within orthodoxy. And has that been your experience as well in your reading? And perhaps you could have a program along these lines.
Do you mean the question of whether or not it's unprecedented?
Yes, and particularly when it comes to like the homosexual issues. Has there ever been a time in church history where there's been such a push to make it accepted within the pales of orthodoxy in the church?
It's a good question, Ty. Thank you very much. And it is something, actually, I don't know if we've ever asked the question about, with regard to the homosexual issue, how far it goes back, except in the most general sense, we've talked with Dr. Leon Pottles about the feminization of the church, and that certainly goes hand in glove with the homosexual issue. There's no two ways about that. Would we have lesbians in the pulpit if we hadn't ordained women into the clergy? No. Would we have gay men in the pulpit? Maybe. But I don't know if we'd be willing to make that huge jump of a compromise if we hadn't made the little one to permit against God's clear word women into the pastoral office. Little compromises add up to big compromises. We know this. We know this when we're talking morals, don't we? I mean, there are pastors out there who will spend a lot of time telling their people not to compromise on moral issues. A little compromise, a little problem, will lead to big problems, right? Makes perfect sense to us in moral issues. And the same pastors see no problem with a little compromise when it comes to something they consider to be theological. Sometimes that term theological is just another word for irrelevant to real life. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I will get to this article on that the AFA finally is paying attention to Lutherans because they're talking about homosexuality. Lisa is calling from Houston, Texas, listening on the internet. Lisa, welcome.
Back to your question a few minutes ago, why people don't call in on topics like this. Taking a stand means taking heat. And while we're willing to do so for some things, we're afraid to for others. I also ran across a neat quote, if you have time for it.
Please.
C.F.W. Walther, June 15, 1870. The Antichrist long ago succeeded in seating himself in the midst of God's temple through false security and carelessness in the church. Later, through false security and carelessness of the church, the false union also crept in. Now it is up to us to assert ourselves over these enemies and in particular disentangle ourselves from the webs and threads of the syncretistic spirit of the times. Those old dead guys knew what to say.
They certainly did. Thank you so much, Lisa. I appreciate you listening there on the internet. And for that quote, those old dead guys, I'll tell you what, I think they saw more clearly. You know, C.F.W. Walther, if you would have shown him a computer, he would have marveled. He couldn't have put together a Saturday night service on his laptop or PowerPoint presentation to wow the congregation on Sunday morning. If you would have shown him the Jumbotron in church, he would have just probably stood there with his mouth hanging open. You ever seen a picture of this guy? Bald, toothless. He's not good looking, even if he had hair and teeth. Amazingly, in his day, he was the pastor of about a half a dozen congregations in the St. Louis area called the Gesamtgemeinde. And he was president of a church body and president of a seminary all at the same time. He wouldn't be able to grow a church today. Not good looking enough. He did fine in the 1800s. But I tell you what, that's why God gave the church men like that in those days, so that we could listen to them in these days. They saw it coming. If you would have said to someone like, or in that era, to someone like C.F.W. Walther, or if you would have said to any of his contemporaries in the Christian scene, or going back a century or two, to Jonathan Edwards, for the First Great Awakening, one day there will be homosexuals standing in Christian pulpits. He probably would have said, "What's a homosexual?" It would have been so foreign to his thought. If you would have said to him, one day, in this very nation, there will be Christian pastors worshiping and praying with people of religions you haven't even heard of yet, Mr. Edwards. You know the old saying, so-and-so is probably rolling over in his grave. Imagine a lot of those old dead guys are rolling over in their graves. Martin Luther included. He's probably spinning like a top. Now, the quote that she read there from Walther, you know, that would be a great book. That would be a great book. Smart Things Dead Guys Once Said. Or maybe a title would be Listen to Dead Christians. Just a book of quotations from dead Christians. The quote she read talked about false security and carelessness in the church. I think that's what I meant when I said doctrinal apathy before. Just not caring about the theology. And what did he track? He said, look, it was through false security and carelessness in the church that we got the papacy. And then came what he called the false union. Walther was talking about ecumenia before there was ecumenia. A union between the Reformed and the Lutherans in Germany. The whole reason he left Germany to come to America, he and his colleagues. And he says, now it is our duty to not only stand against these things, but to disentangle ourselves from the web we find ourselves entangled in. Maybe that's what I've been trying to say, and this is a thought that's been rolling around in my head for weeks now. Remember a couple weeks ago during Open Lines when I said that the direction that the Episcopal Church USA or the Presbyterian Church USA are going, that's the direction every church is going to go? Some will get there slower, and I talked about the point of no return and how you don't know you've passed it until you pass it. And by the time you pass it, you can't go back and look at it again, because that's kind of the way the point of no return works. I think that's what I was trying to say. It's not as though we have to guard from being entangled in these things in the church. We have to disentangle ourselves. We're constantly trying to disentangle ourselves from error and take our stand on the truth. The Christian struggle in the world never gives us a moment to rest. It doesn't. We cannot ever sit back and rest on our laurels and say, now we've got the truth, we've got that particular doctrine or teaching completely sewn up. We can put that away in the lockbox, turn the key, and never have to worry about it again. And we especially can't do that with the center of all Christian teaching, the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is always under attack. What does Satan, this alone should give us pause. What does Satan hate more than anything? What does Satan hate more than God himself? He hates the gospel. He cannot bear it. It is his constant and sole aim in whatever he does to rob the world and the Christian and the church of the gospel. He spares no expense toward this aim, and he is willing to undertake any measures, underhanded, overhanded, subtle, overt, whatever it takes, The devil is the ultimate pragmatist. Whatever works, as long as the gospel is out of the hands and the ears of unbelievers and believers, he doesn't care. And there are people who actually think we can keep the gospel and compromise the truth. You know, the Episcopal Church USA, they believed that they could keep the gospel while compromising the truth. They actually said that they were going to undertake some of these compromises. The Episcopal Church USA, the Presbyterian Church USA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, why have they been entering into communion agreements with everybody and their dog? Why? They say, well, it's for the sake of the mission of the church. We're doing it so that we could get the gospel out. The problem is, after that much compromise, there's no gospel left to get out, as evidenced by the first conversation we had here today, where the gospel has been reduced to, where do you stand on nuclear proliferation? That's the kind of gospel you end up with after compromising the truth. Bryce is calling from Loveland, Colorado. He's been waiting there a while and listening on the internet. Bryce, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd. I appreciate what you just said about the struggle. I mean, because I've been listening to Issues, Etc. for a couple years now, and it seems like the more I learn, the greater my struggle becomes, and it's almost got unbearable with my pastor. He's absorbed the church growth model, hook, line, sinker, fisherman in boots, and he you know, the message on Easter was, what are the stones in your life? And it was just too much. It was just too much for me to handle. I just couldn't believe it. You know, that's like Jesus only came for us to overcome some problems in our life. And the message is so watered down, and it does affect every other thing. You know, they're struggling for growth so much that they're pandering to groups, and it's just scary to me. I can't handle it anymore. And I guess the more I listen to Issues, Etc., the more frustrated I get when I see the practice.
Try hosting the show sometime.
Yeah.
Bryce, I can't give you any direct advice because I don't know your situation well enough to do that. But I would say this. There's only one thing I would say. There does have to be a line eventually when you say, look, this has become more of the devil's effort to rob me of the gospel than it has become God's effort to bring me the gospel. The two are always in struggle with one another. I mean, no matter where you go to church, you will always encounter the devil's efforts to rob you of the gospel. Always, in one form or another. It's when God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel. It's true, okay?
Mm.
However, there does have to be a line where you draw it and you say, look, I am no longer able to hear the gospel here. And I don't know if it's still here. Maybe it's hidden under all the falderol and the hoop-de-doo and the filigree and the ribbons and the bows and the bells and the whistles. Maybe they got it hidden behind the Jumbotron. I don't know. Maybe behind there's a cross. But there does come a line sooner or later, and that's when you've got to say, I don't know what God is doing in this situation here, but I know there's got to be a place where the gospel is being preached, and I got to be there rather than here. But don't expect this. Do not flee in an effort to bring the struggle to an end, because it never will in this life be over. The devil will always be trying to rob you and me and every Christian of the gospel, and he'll always be trying to silence the gospel in the church so that no one else hears it. He's got enough trouble trying to take care of everybody who's heard it and taking it out of their hearts and minds, but his real goal is that no one else hear it too. I guess I'm just saying, wherever you go, you will find this struggle. But that is part of what the church is. The church is militant here on earth. It's not triumphant yet. And there's a kind of a temptation toward triumphalism that says, if I can just find the perfect church, I won't have to struggle anymore to hear the truth. That's just not the case. It's just not the case. And I'll pray for you, brother. Thank you for calling. And for those of you who are listening on the internet, by the way, we always do welcome your calls. Look, I know of listeners. I'm sorry I can't get to the rest of you callers. We will have a little open lines in the last half hour of the program if things go as planned. Maybe we'll get one more in here before we go. But there's a few concluding thoughts. Harold from St. Charles. Harold, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, you know, C.F.W. Walter and the old fellows there, they were aware of what's homosexuality. You know, they couldn't help but reading in the Old Testament and in Romans 1, so and other places in the New Testament. They knew what it was. Unfortunately, they probably didn't foresee that it could cause such havoc in the church today. And, you know, you talked about the church militant. The late respected Dr. Al Berry always stressed that, ecclesia militantis, until, you know, God summons us at the great day of judgment, it's going to be the church militant, and we must fight to preserve what we have in that. And unfortunately, we got people in our denomination today that scoff at that, didn't have any use for Dr. Berry, and, you know, the current leadership wants to negotiate and talk with Elka, and carry on with them. And prior to that, you know, Elka didn't want to have anything to do with Dr. Al Berry. And one prominent...
Real quickly, Harold, because I got to wrap this up.
Yeah. One prominent person there at Concordia Seminary told me, he said, Harold, it's all Dr. Berry's fault. It's all Dr. Berry's fault. Okay.
Harold, thank you for the call. This is why the church is called the church militant. And we can't get out of this. You cannot be a conscientious objector in this battle, folks. I know that there are Christian congregations and church bodies that say, look, we can opt out of the battle. Well, they do. The only way to do that, you know, the only way to opt out of the battle in the church militant is to give up and surrender. That's it. You let the culture come in and determine what you're going to do. You've given up. Be it the culture, the human heart, the devil. Those are the three great enemies that Luther outlines. The world, the devil, and our flesh. To give in to one is to give in to all three. And the only other option is, as St. Paul says, put on the whole armor of God. And what is that armor? It's not the helmet of feeling good and the breastplate of self-esteem and the belt of what? Growth? No. Feet shod with the gospel, the belt of truth, the breastplate of righteousness, the helmet, and the shield of faith. And then, last but not least, folks, something, if the church puts it down or puts it away or leaves it sheathed and says, we like to keep that sword real nice and shiny. And if we keep it in the sheath, it'll stay shinier. No. The only way to keep the sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, shiny is to get it out and use it. And that's part of the struggle. It's the only thing God's given us. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.